The Fellowship of the Ring, Cassette 14.
Chapter 7. The Mirror of Galadriel. The sun was sinking behind the mountains, and the shadows were deepening in the woods when they went on again. Their paths now went into thickets, where the dusk had already gathered. Night came beneath the trees as they walked, and the elves uncovered their silver lamps. Suddenly they came out into the open again, and found themselves under a pale evening sky pricked by a few early stars. There was a wide treeless space before them, running in a great circle and bending away on either hand. Beyond it was a deep foss lost in soft shadow, but the grass upon its brink was green, as if it glowed still in memory of the sun that had gone. Upon the further side there rose to a great height a green wall encircling a green hill, thronged with mallorn trees, taller than any they had yet seen in all the land. Their height could not be guessed, but they stood up in the twilight like living towers. In their many-tiered branches, and amid their ever-moving leaves, countless lights were gleaming, green and gold and silver. Haldir turned towards the company. "Welcome to Karas Galathon," he said. "Here is the city of the Galathrim, where dwell the Lord Celeborn and Galadriel, the Lady of Lorien. But we cannot enter here, for the gates do not look northward. We must go round to the southern side, and the way is not short, for the city is great." There was a road paved with white stone running on the outer brink of the foss. Along this they went westward, with the city ever climbing up like a green cloud upon their left. And as the night deepened, more lights sprang forth, until all the hills seemed afire with stars. They came at last to a white bridge, and crossing found the great gates of the city. They faced southwest, set between the ends of the encircling wall that here overlapped, and they were tall and strong, and hung with many lamps. Haldir knocked and spoke, and the gates opened soundlessly. But of guards Frodo could see no sign. The travellers passed within, and the gates shut behind them. They were in a deep lane between the ends of the wall, and passing quickly through it, they entered the city of the trees. No folk could they see, nor hear any feet upon the paths, but there were many voices about them and in the air above. Far away up on the hill they could hear the sound of singing falling from on high like soft rain upon leaves. They went along many paths and climbed many stairs until they came to the high places and saw before them, amid a wide lawn, a fountain shimmering. It was lit by silver lamps that swung from the boughs of trees, and it fell into a basin of silver from which a white stream spilled. Upon the south side of the lawn there stood the mightiest of all the trees. Its great smooth bole gleamed like grey silk, and up it towered, until its first branches, far above, opened their huge limbs under shadowy clouds of leaves. Beside it a broad white ladder stood, and at its foot three elves were seated. They sprang up as the travellers approached, and Frodo saw that they were tall and clad in grey mail, and from their shoulders hung long white cloaks. "Here dwell Celeborn and Galadriel," said Haldir. "It is their wish that you should ascend and speak with them." One of the elf wardens then blew a clear note on a small horn, and it was answered three times from far above. "I will go first," said Haldir. "Let Frodo come next, and with him Legolas. The others may follow as they wish. It is a long climb for those that are not accustomed to such stairs, but you may rest upon the way." As he climbed slowly up, Frodo passed many flats, some on one side, some on another, and some set about the bole of the tree, so that the ladder passed through them. At a great height above the ground he came to a wide tarlan, like the deck of a great ship. On it was built a house, so large that almost it would have served for a hall of men upon the earth. He entered behind Haldir, and found that he was in a chamber of oval shape, in the midst of which grew the trunk of the great Malorn, now tapering towards its crown, and yet making still a pillar of wide girth. The chamber was filled with a soft light. Its walls were green and silver, and its roof of gold. Many elves were seated there. On two chairs beneath the bole of the tree, and canopied by a living bough, there sat, side by side, Celeborn and Galadriel. They stood up to greet their guests, after the manner of elves, even those who were accounted mighty kings. Very tall they were, and the lady no less tall than the lord, and they were grave and beautiful. They were clad wholly in white, and the hair of the lady was of deep gold, and the hair of the lord Celeborn was of silver long and bright, but no sign of age was upon them, unless it were in the depths of their eyes. For these were keen as lances in the starlight, and yet profound, the wells of deep memory. Haldir led Frodo before them, and the lord welcomed him in his own tongue. The lady Galadriel said no word, but looked long upon his face.
"Sit now beside my chair, Frodo of the Shire," said Celeborn. "When all have come, we will speak together."
Each of the companions he greeted courteously by name as they entered.
"Welcome, Aragorn, son of Arathorn," he said. "It is 38 years of the world outside since you came to this land, and those years lie heavy on you. But the end is near, for good or ill. Here lay aside your burden for a while. Welcome, son of Thranduil. Too seldom do my kindred journey hither from the north. Welcome, Gimli, son of Gloin. It is long indeed since we saw one of Durin's folk in Carras Galathon. But today we have broken our long law. May it be a sign that though the world is now dark, better days are at hand, and that friendship shall be renewed between our peoples."
Gimli bowed low. When all the guests were seated before his chair, the lord looked at them again.
"Here there are 8, he said. 9 were to set out, so said the messengers. But maybe there has been some change of counsel that we have not heard. Elrond is far away, and darkness gathers between us, and all this year the shadows have grown longer."
"Nay, there was no change of counsel," said the Lady Galadriel, speaking for the first time. Her voice was clear and musical, but deeper than woman's wont. "Gandalf the Grey set out with the company, but he did not pass the borders of this land. Now tell us where he is, for I much desired to speak with him again, but I cannot see him from afar unless he comes within the fences of Lothlorien. A grey mist is about him, and the ways of his feet and of his mind are hidden from me."
"Alas," said Aragorn, "Gandalf the Grey fell into shadow. He remained in Moria and did not escape."
At these words all the elves in the hall cried aloud in grief and amazement.
"These are evil tidings," said Celeborn, "the most evil that have been spoken here in long years, full of grievous deeds." He turned to Haldir. "Why has nothing of this been told to me before?" he asked in the elven tongue.
"We have not spoken to Haldir of our deeds or our purpose," said Legolas. "At first we were weary, and danger was too close behind, and afterwards we almost forgot our grief for a time, as we walked in gladness on the fair paths of Lorien. Yet our grief is great, and our loss cannot be mended," said Frodo. "Gandalf was our guide, and he led us through Moria, and when our escape seemed beyond hope he saved us, and he fell."
"Tell us now the full tale," said Celeborn.
Then Aragorn recounted all that had happened upon the pass of Carathras, and in the days that followed, and he spoke of Balin and his book, and the fight in the chamber of Mazabul, and the fire, and the narrow bridge, and the coming of the terror.
"An evil of the ancient world, it seemed, such as I have never seen before," said Aragorn. "It was both a shadow and a flame, strong and terrible."
"It was a Balrog of Morgoth," said Legolas. "Of all elf banes the most deadly, save the one who sits in the Dark Tower."
"Indeed I saw upon the bridge that which haunts our darkest dreams. I saw Durin's bane," said Gimli in a low voice, and dread was in his eyes.
"Alas," said Celeborn, "we long have feared that under Carathras a terror slept. But had I known that the dwarves had stirred up this evil in Moria again, I would have forbidden you to pass the northern borders, you and all that went with you. And, if it were possible, one would say that at the last Gandalf fell from wisdom into folly, going needlessly into the net of Moria."
"He would be rash indeed that said that thing," said Galadriel gravely. "Needless were none of the deeds of Gandalf in life. Those that followed him knew not his mind and cannot report his full purpose. But however it may be with the guide, the followers are blameless. Do not repent of your welcome to the dwarf. If our folk had been exiled long and far from Lothlorien, who of the Galadhrim, even Celeborn the Wise, would pass nigh and would not wish to look upon their ancient home, though it had become an abode of dragons? Dark is the water of Hel-el-Zaram, and cold are the springs of Kibil-Nala, and fair were the many-pillared halls of Khazad-dûm in elder days, before the fall of mighty kings beneath the stone." She looked upon Gimli, who sat glowering and sad, and she smiled. And the dwarf, hearing the names given in his own ancient tongue, looked up and met her eyes, and it seemed to him that he looked suddenly into the heart of an enemy and saw their love and understanding. Wonder came into his face, and then he smiled in answer. He rose clumsily and bowed in dwarf fashion, saying,
"Yet more fair is the living land of Lorien, and the Lady Galadriel is above all the jewels that lie beneath the earth."
There was silence. At length Celeborn spoke again.
"I did not know that your plight was so evil," he said. "Let Gimli forget my harsh words. I spoke in the trouble of my heart. I will do what I can to aid you, each according to his wish and need, but especially that one of the little folk who bears the burden."
"Your quest is known to us," said Galadriel, looking at Frodo, "but we will not here speak of it more openly. Yet not in vain will it prove, maybe, that you came to this land seeking aid, as Gandalf himself plainly purposed. For the Lord of the Galadhrim is accounted the wisest of the elves of Middle-earth, and a giver of gifts beyond the power of kings. He has dwelt in the west since the days of Dorne, and I have dwelt with him years uncounted. For ere the fall of Nargothrond or Gondolin, I passed over the mountains, and together through ages of the world we have fought the long defeat. I it was who first summoned the White Council, and if my designs had not gone amiss, it would have been governed by Gandalf the Grey, and then, mayhap, things would have gone otherwise. But even now there is hope left. I will not give you counsel, saying do this or do that, for not in doing or contriving, nor in choosing between this course and another, can I avail, but only in knowing what was and is, and in part also what shall be. But this I will say to you, your quest stands upon the edge of a knife. Stray but a little, and it will fail, to the ruin of all. Yet hope remains while all the company is true." And with that word she held them with her eyes, and in silence looked searchingly at each of them in turn. None save Legolas and Aragorn could long endure her glance. Sam quickly blushed and hung his head. At length the Lady Galadriel released them from her eyes, and she smiled. "Do not let your hearts be troubled," she said. "Tonight you shall sleep in peace." Then they sighed and felt suddenly weary, as those who have been questioned long and deeply, though no words had been spoken openly.
"Go now," said Celeborn. "You are worn with sorrow and much toil. Even if your quest did not concern us closely, you should have refuge in this city until you are healed and refreshed. Now you shall rest, and we will not speak of your further road for a while."
That night the company slept upon the ground, much to the satisfaction of the hobbits. The elves spread for them a pavilion among the trees near the fountain, and in it they laid soft couches. Then, speaking words of peace, with fair elvish voices they left them. For a little while the travellers talked of their night before in the treetops, and of their day's journey, and of the lord and lady, for they had not yet the heart to look further back.
"What did you blush for, Sam?" said Pippin. "You soon broke down. Anyone would have thought you had a guilty conscience. I hope it was nothing worse than a wicked plot to steal one of my blankets."
"I never thought no such thing," answered Sam, in no mood for jest. "If you want to know, I felt as if I hadn't got nothing on, and I didn't like it. She seemed to be looking inside me and asking me what I would do if she gave me the chance of flying back home to the Shire to a nice little hobbit hole with a bit of garden of my own."
"That's funny," said Merry. "Almost exactly what I felt myself. Only, well, I don't think I'll say any more," he ended lamely. All of them, it seemed, had fared alike. Each had felt that he was offered a choice between a shadow full of fear that lay ahead and something that he greatly desired. Clear before his mind it lay, and to get it he had only to turn aside from the road and leave the quest and the war against Sauron to others.
"And it seemed to me, too," said Gimli, "that my choice would remain secret and known only to myself."
"To me it seemed exceedingly strange," said Boromir. "Maybe it was only a test, and she thought to read our thoughts for her own good purpose, but almost I should have said that she was tempting us and offering what she pretended to have the power to give. It need not be said that I refused to listen. The men of Minas Tirith are true to their word." But what he thought that the lady had offered him, Boromir did not tell. And as for Frodo, he wouldn't speak, though Boromir pressed him with questions.
"She held you long in her gaze, Ringbearer," he said.
"Yes," said Frodo, "but whatever came into my mind then I will keep there."
"Well, have a care," said Boromir. "I don't feel too sure of this elvish lady and her purposes." "Speak no evil of the Lady Galadriel," said Aragorn sternly. "You know not what you say. There is in her, and in this land, no evil, unless a man bring it hither himself. Then let him beware. But tonight I shall sleep without fear for the first time since I left Rivendell. And may I sleep deep, and forget for a while my grief. I am weary in body and in heart." He cast himself down upon his couch, and fell at once into a long sleep. The others soon did the same, and no sound or dream disturbed their slumber. When they woke, they found that the light of day was broad upon the lawn before the pavilion, and the fountain rose and fell, glittering in the sun. They remained some days in Lothlorien, so far as they could tell or remember. All the while that they dwelt there the sun shone clear, save for a gentle rain that fell at times, and passed away, leaving all things fresh and clean. The air was cool and soft, as if it were early spring, yet they felt about them the deep and thoughtful quiet of winter. It seemed to them that they did little but eat and drink and rest, and walk among the trees, and it was enough. They hadn't seen the lord and lady again, and they had little speech with the elven folk, for few of these knew or would use the western tongue. Haldir had bidden them farewell, and gone back again to the fences of the north,
where great watch was now kept since the tidings of Moria that the company had brought. Legolas was away much among the Galathrim, and after the first night he did not sleep with the other companions, though he returned to eat and talk with them. Often he took Gimli with him when he went abroad in the land, and the others wondered at this change. Now, as the companions sat or walked together, they spoke of Gandalf, and all that each had known and seen of him came clear before their minds. As they were healed of hurt and weariness of body, the grief of their loss grew more keen. Often they heard nearby elvish voices singing, and knew that they were making songs of lamentation for his fall, for they caught his name among the sweet sad words that they could not understand. "Mithrandir, Mithrandir," sang the elves, "O Pilgrim Grey," for so they loved to call him. But if Legolas was with the company, he would not interpret the songs for them, saying that he had not the skill, and that for him the grief was still too near, a matter for tears and not yet for song. It was Frodo who first put something of his sorrow into halting words.